I very much approach this generative AI technology as something that's going to help me focus in on more strategic, more high-value work.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Nikki. Nikki is the head of legal ops in and chief of staff of Pure Storage today, but you're also in Facebook and in Adobe, and I can't wait to learn more about your journey. Nikki, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Sagi.
So, Nikki, let's start at the beginning. How did you end up in legal operations and pretty impressive resume of you know, impressive companies? Tell us a little bit.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. Actually, I wish I could say it was all pre-planned and part of my grand scheme, career development scheme, but it really actually started off at Adobe in 1999, where I went straight from law school in-house, which was really unusual for that period of time. I think we're seeing it more now, but for me, it was straight from law school to a very young Adobe. I think I was employee like 3,400. And so it was all about software licensing at the time. And I found a home there, stayed there for 15 years, rode the wave of user-generated content, public forums, software as a service. I mean, the whole gamut. As I left, we were tackling more IT-heavy negotiations, IT-specific negotiations in our legal contracts for software as a service and sharing of confidential information, we'll put it that way. So that was kind of the start. I took a break after that, spent some time at home, discovered that I preferred being in the office. Went back to work. Nothing against my kids. They're awesome. They're wonderful. But I really do enjoy working. And so since I had spent so much time at Adobe, decided to go to work, you know, started at Paragon Legal with May O'Malley, working as a contractor. And that's how I landed my job at Facebook. Also at Symantec for the divestiture of Veritas, which also was an incredible learning experience. And so I feel like I expedited my time, my learning curve by hopping around a little bit.
Very good. And so from outside console to inside, and then now for operations and chief of staff. So tell me about that transition.
So I had worked, I'd come aboard on at Pure Storage to help revise their procurement transactions, contracts, negotiation, like really dive into partnership with the procurement team at Pure Storage to really put a process in place. And that was really where I found a liking to like process, incorporating technology, process, using my legal background to understand the ins and outs. And when we had a change in leadership within the Pure Storage legal team, I threw some ideas out about having a more dedicated legal operations and found myself in that space. I think really draws on my experience as a transactions attorney, as an IP attorney, really understanding and working with closely with the business as long as I have been that business advocate. And it helped me kind of get some experience in working more strategically around the vision of a future legal department. What does that look like?
You know, it's interesting, the transition always from, especially, I guess it's true for all roles, but I think especially in the finance and legal and sometimes even IT, where sort of like the professional practitioner to the sort of like professional process owner. And that's different, you know, sometimes like, so there's obviously when, if you kind of like grow in another department and become like a manager of a team, maybe then a director or whatnot, you're also accountable for the process. But that's different than when you actually own the process and so, sort of like responsible for defining it and improving it and work through it. What are the things that were the most surprising for you when you were, you know, when you kind of like went into this adventure saying, okay, we need a more constructed sort of like legal operation motion. I think we need to align some of those areas more. What was the thing that surprised you
My biggest surprise was how necessary those fundamental leadership skills are in driving this process, and also the investment you need to make in your people. Bringing people along when you're trying to improve or even document a process is sometimes difficult if they don't know, if they don't know the underlying value of what the work that you're asking them to do. So I think some of the biggest surprises were, okay, you know, you actually do have to have some people skills here. It's not for everybody. You have to be able to lead and draw on some experience with that. Not everybody is taught some of these lessons. So I feel like what I brought to this role was a lifetime of learning, a lifetime of learnings, you know, 25 years plus working experience and learning how to engage and motivate people.
Yeah, I think that's a key point. There's a cliche of, you know, operations is about like process and tools and people, and like everyone said, but like it is truly, in my experience, that a third, if not more, than anything you do. Like you need to get the people on board.
I know. I think there's a good example of, you know, I came into the legal operations role thinking I know how to solve our efficiency problems. I came in with a solution. I was like, we need to better manage our intake. And guess what? I've got the right tools for you. And here you go. And I was just met with complete and utter like stonewalling. Like the team was like, what are you talking about? You know? So I was like, oh, no. I can't just come with the solution. I have to actually bring them along on the entire journey. And so it took me 2 years to actually implement with my team a legal service delivery tool and model and engagement. But I felt like I knew I had the answer right away. But that to me was like, oh, all right, I'm going to have to do this differently. And that was, you know, why I said like the people is probably the most important, making sure you're bringing them along and they understand the value.
Yeah. Yeah. Attaching kind of like to this point, the technology world obviously has a big pull on a lot of the ways, you know, people run teams and businesses, or I guess it's natural, but it is a weird sometimes to think about the chicken and an egg cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Of it a little bit, right? Is because some problems, to solve them, you need, there's a barrier of capabilities that needs to exist, whether technology or not, right? It can be like cultural gap too. But so like there needs to be like something to help you kind of shrink the gap. And then to your point, like you still, even if you have that, whatever solution it is, that solution can be a technical solution, can be a process solution. If you don't bring along the rest of the organization and align them on that, that's also kind of like irrelevant. When you think about the last couple years and sort of like looking forward a little bit, there's obviously a lot of chatter when it comes to AI, when it comes to lawyers being a big part of it. There's a lot of reviewing of content, a lot of creation of content when it comes to law practice, especially around contracts. You know, where it's, you mentioned the crossover with procurement and handling suppliers and so on. How do you guys think about it? How do you think about it when you're trying to strategize? I think a lot of people listening to this too are trying to digest some of those things and think about what is their personal roadmap and team roadmap. How do you go about that?
No, I think it's, I really do like this topic, and I think it's fascinating because it really just depends on where you're sitting. As an in-house lawyer all my life, I very much approach this generative AI technology as something that's going to help me focus in on more strategic, more high value work. And as an in-house lawyer, I think the value we bring to our client, the business, is that we understand the business very intimately and are able to apply priorities, risk, you know, risk tolerance. We can intimately know our client and apply what's best for our client. And that's the value we bring. And I don't think that changes with Gen AI. I think we still bring that value, and house law departments still bring that value to their client. Gen AI just at this stage is helping us automate and work more quickly on the administrative side, getting that template, you know, maybe suggesting some language. And I think that the value of the legal department will change, but the tools will help us do our jobs differently.
And, you know, I think I agree with you. I think also one thing that I've noticed repeatedly is that when you listen to the sort of like the news cycles around some of those things, not getting into, you know, a rabbit hole about news cycles, but especially in technology and especially with AI, it focuses a lot of times on the kind of like top-notch, clean, cool, crazy example that was, you know, was achieved as a benchmark, a little bit of a kind of like, how fast are we moving, right? Like, look at this crazy thing that someone was able to do with this technology that was like inconceivable 6 months ago. So a lot of it is true, and not a lot, like this is true, but at the same time, you see people that are trying to use this. First of all, they don't even know what to do with it. Like, they kind of like sit in front of it. If anyone kind of like tried ChatGPT, there's the people that immediately kind of feel at home and use it for everything. And then people are like, oh, that's just cool, but like, what am I even at? Like, you know, I write me a song, you know, like you don't even know kind of like where to go. And really what I tell people is it's a pro tool. Like, it has the potential of like really being in everyone's pocket. And some things are true about, like, I don't know, ChatGPT launches new things pretty often. OpenAI does with their ChatGPT product itself. I'm not even talking about the AI model and stuff, like the actual utility of it. But it's just a power tool, like you think about like a saw, like an electric saw versus like manual saw. You still need someone to know how to use it and have something to use it for. And so we talk a lot about that. I talk a lot about it, and I kind of find myself in this topic in a lot of episodes. I wonder from your end, you know, looking at Pure Storage as an example, or previous companies too, whatever you feel comfortable with, from a culture perspective, how much do you feel like people right now in the space, I mean, and by that, I mean the attorneys themselves, middle management, still think about it as this outside thing that is might real, might not be real, might be happening soon, might not happen soon or whatnot, versus actually, oh, this is a great tool for me to kind of like reutilize for certain tasks that I go to. Because I'm sure you remember Google was like that at the beginning too. Like, people wouldn't go to Google for anything. It was like this thing you can do. And I even remember in the early days, you would be like an expert in Google because you were good at searching. You know, like, it was a thing about being good at searching. And then there was a joke that people wouldn't use Google, so you would send them a link that's like, just Google it type of thing. I don't know if you've ever seen that joke. It's like, don't ask me, just Google it. So like, eventually, people, you know, it is used broadly, but it is a massive, massive leverage if you can use it early. If you know how to use Google early, if you knew how to use Google early, then you are able to move faster than your peers or competitors, right? I think that's the same. I wonder how you guys see it internally.
I think it depends on who you engage in the conversation. I think if you talk to our CFO, like, he zooms in on that one example of work being done more efficiently and expects kind of like, hey, why don't you just do this? Like, do we need all these lawyers? Like, and I think that, so you have to temper the expectations of your customers, your clients, and your team. But I also think that at the same time, you want to, Pure Storage is very, has always been, and the people working within the legal department and across, I think, all the business functions have been open to being a consumer of this technology and really exploring the possibilities. And so I never felt at Pure Storage that we were like, ooh, or any of the lawyers or our executives were like, ooh, this is scary. No, it was like, let's lean in. Let's try and consume this and see how we consume it and how it works naturally within us, within our workday. As a legal operations function, looking towards the future, I think what we've taken it upon, my team has taken it upon itself to actually help our team do is consume it, is say, hey, have you thought about using ChatGPT to, I don't know, do a first draft of that performance review that you need to do, or that feedback that you need to give, or, you know, that email that you're struggling with writing, or just, you know, making it sound more professional, or like in giving them examples about how they can cut down the time it takes to draft something from scratch. Like, and it's the small things. We're not talking about utilizing, you know, confidential information or doing that. It's just like, how do we push the consumption of this particular technology so that we sharpen our, we exercise that muscle in our team so that when the technology actually gets to the point where it is delivering on that really great stuff, our team is prepared to actually engage with it competently and with curiosity.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
Yeah, I like the example too you gave with drafting. I mean, you made me think about a funny, again, early in the Google days, you would be like, people would think about it as a new form of yellow pages. And so I remember having this conversation with someone that, you know, we go to Google to search for some vendor, like I don't know, like a coffee place or whatever, phone number, to then call them and ask them, are they open? Right? Which is kind of like, you know, I mean, it's like the basic, or obviously now it's like very laughable, but you know, 15 years ago, that was kind of like, you know, and I think that is just a parable to kind of like think through the mind shift that you need to have, because most recently, to your example, I had a similar example. Well, on a performance review, people were like, try to use ChatGPT, and it was like, it was crap. It was completely unhelpful. And I was like, what did you try to do? Did you try to tell it to write it for you? Like, it has no idea who is that person that you're reviewing and what, you know, the way you can write it, use it, is just brain dump your thoughts, your review. Like, actually, you still need to be the one writing the review. You just don't have to be the one, quote unquote, typing the review. Right, you can just brain dump it, even with voice these days, you know, just like tell it, generally speaking, what is your review, and then have it take a stab at it. But then that's what it is. It's an iterative thing. It's like it takes stabs at it, and then you change it, and so on and so forth. And same goes to contracts, same goes to a lot of other things. And I think what I see with CFOs, I also relate to what you were saying about the CFO trying to cut costs. I think same thing happens with engineering too. It's like, why, you know, like someone like Mark Zuckerberg goes and say, we're not hiring engineering anymore because we're going to use AI, which is kind of like rich coming from him because he has a very, very, very strong engineers already. So a very, very strong engineer can do a work of a lot more engineers to begin with. And then you give it AI, which is a professional tool, then it can do even better job at that. So that makes sense. But it doesn't mean that, just fire your engineers and, you know, use AI to do everything for it. Same goes with lawyers in other profession. But it does important for lawyers and attorneys to understand that, is that someone else that will actually become proficient at leveraging those tools is just going to be a lot faster.
Right. And I think, like you said, it starts with learning to understand how to query. The query that you know, the output's only as good as the input, you know? Yeah. So if you're giving it a bad query, it's going to give you a bad output. And I think that just takes a little bit of practice. And I think people, if you're not in there using it and testing it out, then I just think you're going to fall further behind you kind of have to exercise the muscle and learn how to ask it the right questions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I feel like, at least from the movies and the TV, like, lawyers should know the concept of entry-level intern or whatnot, that they kind of like jerk around and be like, go do this, go do that. And then they do a shitty job. And then you're like, no, that's a bad job, and go and like do it again type of thing. But then when they talk to an AI, large language model, they're like, that thing is not good. It like gave me like nonsense answer. I'm not going to use it anymore. Like, the entire point is you need to work with it. You need to get it to a point where you understand what that thing is good at and where you can leverage it at. And that's really that's where it becomes powerful.
I do think that. I think we just spend more time talking about the large language model and the power behind the tool itself and where it's getting the data. I think that's really important. Understanding that, you know, not just not taking it at face value, but also understanding, okay, maybe this is not the right answer because it's not querying in a large language model that is sufficient to support what I'm going to do or what I need it to do. And so getting them to, I think understanding the queries is the first step. You know, educating my team on the large language model is the other thing, because the data has to be in there for it to be able to be searchable or to be queried. And so that's the other piece of kind of what my team is trying to do, is to help build a robust data set of information so that when people query a certain question, the information pops up. So that's important too. We do use a tool at Pure Storage that sits on top of all of our terminal applications and pulls. You can query it and it pulls from our various databases. There are accessibility permissions that are included in that. So depending on what permissions you have, you can access different things. But that right now is becoming our employees' environment's Google, its query, to search for Pure Storage relevant information. And so the more we're inputting information into that, into our systems, the better the query is the employee is going to have. Maybe they don't even actually have to reach out to legal. That's a one and done situation. So there's that aspect too, making sure the information is out there to be queried.
Yeah, that's true. So what is kind of top of mind for you? We're still in January, although we're getting to the end of January, but what's top of mind for you for 2025?
I'm going to have to say it probably was evident in my CFO example, but budget is top of mind for us. Mm. I think that we're fortunate to have gone this long without really squeezing our G&A functions, but that squeezes naturally happening, and not in a bad way, just in a very natural way. And so I'm forced with trying to get our team to think about how we work in a little bit of a different way. We can't continue to take on projects. We have to set some boundaries with our clients. And that's really what's top of mind for me right now. Making sure my experts are focusing on the high risk, high impact work. And that if we have to turn away some work, really setting that expectation with our clients.
Well, good luck. that's hard not to crack, but I think it will be like that in 2025 in many places. So it's good to get a head start. Well, that was really great. And I think, you know, a lot of very relatable. I like to ask, you went through different areas in your career, like you said, 25 years in this. What is something that maybe an advice you got early on that you feel is worth paying forward, almost on a personal note?
Yeah, this one might be a little bit embarrassing, but it came to me very early on in my career. So I'm hoping that gives me a little bit of grace. Read the email was the advice that I got from a senior level attorney. And it really wasn't about just that. It was about, don't have a knee-jerk reaction. Make sure you're informed, you know, make sure you know your audience, like really become not just legally prepared, but also prepared to engage with the business with all the right information. I still find myself getting very frustrated when people don't read my emails. I take a lot of pride in making sure make sure you understand the information before you have that knee-jerk reaction to either become emotional about it or offer an opinion on it.
I love this advice. I think even in the topic we've talked at this time with understanding the query and understanding like what can you do with it, with that, nah, that's like, don't read it. You know, but like also on the personal level, like don't read the headlines, you know, read the article, like, you know,
yes.
and then they read the email with the sense of understanding the stakeholders and people. I think it's a great advice. I appreciate
Sometimes
it.
Sometimes I feel like it's obvious that you should read the email, but
those are the best ones. The ones that are obvious, but then so few people follow, I guess the ones that should be obvious.
Yes. We just need to be reminded.
Exactly. If anyone wants to connect with you, where do they find you? Is that LinkedIn, X? Where do you hang?
I hang out on LinkedIn. I'm trying to slow down my social media role. So LinkedIn is the best place. I'm focusing it on that in that particular area.
Very good. Miki, thank you so much for speaking to me today. And it was a blast.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Sagi, and have a great year.
You too. Cheers for that.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.